Test.
Okay. Oops, excuse me. All right, the November meeting of Los Altos Community Service District will reconvene back into open session. So, Director Wright, could you lead us in the pledge, please?
One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I should point out to everybody, the reason that we gave Director Wright that honor was because it's his birthday today. He finally turned 29 after all these years. So if we could have the report out of closed session, Mr. Seitz, please.
Yes, Mr. President, members of the board. The board did go into closed session on three separate items. First, regarding pending litigation. They took a report from legal counsel in regards to four items, what's known as the bankruptcy case, the LOCSD versus Golden State, which is the ISJ, Core Family Properties versus Los Altos Community Services District, and Dubink versus San Luis Obispo County et al. In regards to Dubink, the board took a vote and authorized settlement of that case, preserving the district's utility easement in the street that's subject to that litigation. Second, we took the liability claim of William Moylan and Beverly DeWitt Moylan. The board voted unanimously to file and to provide a rejection of that claim. In regards to the claim that was added to the agenda, excuse me one minute.
Richard Margetson, the event this year will be December 8th, right after the Christmas parade. All of you have attended before. It's pretty much going to be the same format, choirs, music all day, the silent auction, the toy store. We're going to have barrels there for Toys for Tots and Operation Santa Claus. So come buy a toy, put it in one of the barrels. We get the money for the shelter, and they get the toys. It's double the bang for your buck. One thing different this year, though, is part of the proceeds, just because all of the nonprofits are hurting this year, part of the proceeds from the event are going to be given to an organization, a countywide organization called Transitional Food and Shelter. And what they provide is if a homeless person or a disabled person enters the hospital for some type of treatment and a doctor gives them release orders and there needs to be follow-up, many of them in the past, until this organization was founded in the late 90s, had no place to go other than back to their car or a tent or somebody's couch or whatever. This organization provides, they have some apartments that they have available. They also provide hotel vouchers and kind of assistance living while they're recovering. They're hurting like everybody else. Federal funding's been cut off to them. They're an all-volunteer organization. They have no staff overhead, so pretty much anything that they raise during the year goes to this program. It's a great organization. Like I said, they're hurting like everyone else is, and it kind of goes in with what the shelter provides, but it's a service the shelter does not provide. So this year, part of the proceeds are going to them also. The other thing I wanted to mention with relation to this is, and I gave everybody a flyer, November 14th, New Frontiers is providing their 5% of total proceeds that day to our event, to the shelter. Last year they actually cut our event the largest check they had ever cut a charity in the county. So if you have shopping to do before the holidays at New Frontiers, it's Wednesday the 14th. It's for the entire day. I'll be tabling there. Some other people will be tabling there with information about the event and the shelter and stuff, but 5% of total proceeds. So if you can put off your shopping till that day, it benefits our event and the shelter. The last thing I wanted to say, you know, I could talk more about what the event is and, you know, what we've done in the past and stuff. It, you know, the event is the largest fundraiser in the county for the shelter. And I know you've been reading the papers, and there's been articles, and there's controversy in San Luis, and there's controversy about the new shelter being built and, you know, parking, the homeless parking on the streets and stuff. There's two sides to all of these stories. Just keep that in mind. But what it really comes down to is, you know, when you're in first grade in school and the teacher asks you, what is your goal in life? What do you want to be when you grow up? And we all had to do those little exercises. No child ever said that they wanted to be homeless. No child said they ever wanted to be homeless. And life's tragedies, life's realities come into play. And there's people on the streets that have health issues. There's people on the streets that have mental issues that need to be addressed. The county, you know, is short on providing those services. We have veterans that have come back with war and for one reason or another haven't been able to, you know, get back up to speed. It's a diverse, very diverse population. So just don't label them as this or that. It still comes down to, you know, what separates us from the animal kingdom is we care about those that are in need. You know, it's not the superiority. We all strive to be superior over our fellow man. When things happen, we try to help out. You've heard throughout the country, you've heard from this county, the situation's getting worse. We need to do whatever we can. So I hope it's successful as it's been in the past. December 8th here at the community center all day. If you...
Yeah, Leonard, this is not public comment, Al. Okay, yeah, Leonard has his title as the chief fundraiser to defend this year. Okay, with that, then, we're going to go to our regular agenda. I'm adjusting the agenda, and the first item we're going to hear tonight is the item that was added as the special agenda item, which is a comment letter regarding PG&E's proposed Central Coastal Seismic Imaging Project. General public comment will be after this item. So we're going to take the special agenda item first. There's a staff report in there. I think when the board met last time, just for a little bit of background, the board directed staff to try to accommodate a joint meeting with LOCAC. I can testify to the efforts that we made and Susan made and Vicki made to try to accommodate that. For just a multitude of reasons, that did not work out. So we brought it back to this board. Unfortunately, we were unable to do the joint meeting. Basically, what you have before you, and all the board members have been given this, and there was information packages in the back. You've been given all the resolutions and comment letters submitted by the adjacent public agencies in the county as background information, and you've been given a copy of a draft comment letter. And just for discussion or just for informational purposes, this letter was prepared prior to the Board of Supervisors meeting on Tuesday, where a lot of additional information was put out on the table. So what I'd like to do is we'll go ahead and open it to public comment unless somebody has questions, and then bring it back for the board to discussion. I think really there's three options available to the board at this point. I think the first option is to go ahead and say no, you don't want to send a letter. The second option is to go ahead and take the letter that you have before you, which basically talks about expressing concerns. Or the third option would be to go ahead and adjust that letter to go ahead and make it an opposition letter. So I think those are basically the three options that we have before us. But I would like to get this done, and we do want to get this letter off, assuming we're going to send it as soon as possible. So with that, then, we'll go ahead and open it to public comment.
Excuse me. Thank you. My name is Al Barrell, Coalition for Low-Income Housing. Did you ask me to stop?
No. Let's stop the time here for a minute. This is for the whales you're talking about, for the seismic testing, Al.
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. This is seismic testing. Yes, you do have 3 minutes time available per speaker. I wanted to make sure what you were up there for. The other thing that I would like to do is I'd like to make sure people line up and get in line to speak, okay, so we don't have a delay in people getting up there. Our bylaws do call for people to be ready.
Feeling a little testy tonight, huh?
I'm not feeling too well today. But I was trying to hide that. But anyways, if we could go ahead, so I'd appreciate it. Okay, so Al, we'll start your 3 minutes now.
Thank you. Number one, in the board packet was a letter from the council that represents Morro Bay City Council, Mr. Schultz. That letter was very clear and emphatic. They did not ask for conditions for this permit. They asked this permit to be rejected, period. When we listened to the county board pontification, they sounded like they were considering all kinds of conditions. They want to cover everybody's base and all of this. Look, folks, if you didn't want to live next to a nuclear power plant, why did you move here? There is no definitive test that will stop an earthquake. Nothing will stop an earthquake. So the question that is unanswered is, even if you did do all the 3D testing, kill all the fish, whales, and whatever, run off all the critters, what would you have accomplished? Would PG&E tell you what they would do? Would they retrofit the plant at what cost? Would they really? So this exercise in doing the testing, the 3D testing, which is hugely damaging with the decibels of 250 underwater, is just excruciating pain and probably deadly for a lot of the marine mammals there. And many of them will not come back on their yearly migrations. They will go around the area. Whales are pretty smart. They have memories. So it also destroys their ability to communicate with one another and inhibits their ability to survive and hunt and get their food and mate and other things like that. So I would ask you, this is 2 minutes, right?
Three. One sentence more, that's it.
Vote no. Thank you. No conditions.
Thank you. Next, please.
That was 3 minutes?
Oh, I'm sorry, Al. That was the 1 minute warning. You got another minute, Al. The next speaker gets up there. I want to adjust that light so we can see it down here because we can't see it. There you go. Thank you. All right. With that, then we'll move to the next speaker.
Hi, I'm Gary Freiberg from Los Osos for the last 25 years. And the seismic testing issue is not just about marine life. There's a very important and relevant economic aspect of it because of the importance of the fishing industry in this area. We don't have a lot of industry, of course, as we all know, and the role that the fishing industry plays is really critical. And though the marina is over in Morro Bay, of course, we have a lot of people who work over there, whether it be directly in the fishing industry or one of the related industry, whether it be the restaurants or support businesses. And I think at this time, with all of the information that has recently come out, that we have to be really, really careful about our local economy and how fragile it is. And not only, of course, are we concerned about the marine life with the seismic testing, but I think we need to be concerned about the life of the jobs in the fishing industry. Our family, our community is experiencing a big changeover right now with the implementation of property taxes for the sewer and higher water rates. And I think that this adds to the necessity for us to be really careful. And I hope that you will strongly oppose the seismic testing, not only for the protection of our marine life, but also of the economic life until they find a better way. Last thing I want to say is that I Brian Stacy, who's a leading spokesperson for the fishing industry, about the negotiations that they've had with PG&E. And I'm not here to knock the utility, but the fact is that PG&E had to accept a mediator and also an advocate for the fishing industry. Because of their behavior, they made it really tough on the fishermen to be able to negotiate. They have to go to Templeton and get in line and file the same form as if someone's food goes bad. Whoop. Is that 2 minutes? One more minute, okay. Anyway, the procedure, they haven't dedicated, PG&E hasn't dedicated an avenue of accessibility for the fishing industry. In filing a claim, as I was saying, they'd have to get in line with the same person whose food went bad because their electricity went out. And I'm hoping that in this new process, the negotiation will be made better. And I think that we need to support our local industry, our local jobs, and oppose the seismic testing. So thank you very much.
Good evening. Frank Cilio, Los Osos. When I read this letter, and not that I agree very strongly with what a lot of the speakers have been saying and will be saying, but there's an issue that I've always been concerned about in this community, and that's our water. I would really like to be clear, if you're going to write a letter about environmental impact, that you put something there about our aquifer, because it does go out there past the sand spit into the ocean. And what effect? Be real specific so they know you're looking for that. What effect will that seismic testing have on our aquifer? You know, and so, you know, provide them with the data, how far it goes out, how wide it is, how deep it is out there, and will that affect it? And that they at least include that in their environmental review of the testing. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Martha? That's only because I'm an attorney, right? I have to be respectful of that.
Yeah, let's show a little respect here. Martha Golden, Los Osos. When I read this letter, I was very disappointed because basically it says, oh, please be nice and, you know, if things get really devastated, put some conditions on the permit. Come on, folks. That's not what we need. We need to say no to the testing. Every organization, even those that say, yes, we need to understand more about... We now have an array of three lights. How nice.
It's kind of a Christmas
even though,
day, I guess.
Even those... organizations that say, yes, we need to know more about the earthquake faults and therefore something needs to be done, have said, no, this is all wrong. Look for alternatives. Here's the problem. We have a great trickle-up theory that's in operation here, and it's a great experiment to see how bad the trickle-up is going to be. You've heard the speakers mention that, you know, there's going to be devastation in the ocean, but that impacts the fishing industry. It impacts the tourist industry, or another of them is going to go, and we haven't a clue what is going to happen when they go. And all the testing in the water is not going to answer that question because it's basically unknowable. So it's going to go. And what is PG&E going to do before it goes? Are they going to move all those wet storage bombs that are sitting out there into dry casks immediately? No. Are they going to figure out how to retrofit the plant that sits on an earthquake fault? No. The only thing we know for sure is that whatever they do, including the testing, they will tell the ratepayers to pay for it. So I would hope that you, as representatives of this community and having concern for the community, would send a very, very strong letter to the Coastal Commission saying, no permit. Let PG&E figure out how to solve the problems of that plant that is creating for the millennium if they don't do something. Thank you.
Since we're continuing to have technical problems, we'll have to rely on Ann for the time here. Okay.
Ann's time.
I think we should be okay.
Okay. We always had a hand. Julie Tacker, my concerns with first your letter is that nowhere in it does it say you oppose the project in any way, and I would ask that you emphasize that that's the direction from this community to oppose the project. A little curious about why we didn't talk about this earlier. We seem to be the last district talking about it. The EIR came out. I would think that it went through the regular processes where all the agencies that might be affected were notified, and I don't know that you were. But the city of Morro Bay commented on that EIR, and they were very stern even back in May. What's ironic about that is that we're the last to weigh in, but we're the first to be affected. Box 4, the consolidated project, the project that's supposed to move forward first, is right here on our shore. The decibel level that is estimated to come into Morro Bay, a national estuary, a marine sanctuary, is in excess of 160 decibels. What can survive that if not be seriously harmed by it? And then what does it do to the human element and our dogs playing at Baywood Pier? You know, that it starts to get really too close for comfort. I just wanted to run through really quick for the public at home that maybe didn't pick up the staff report. Morro Bay City Council opposes the project by resolution. Avila Beach CSD opposes the project by resolution. San Simeon CSD opposes the project by resolution. Cambria CSD opposes the project by written letter. North Coast Advisory Council opposes the project by letter. Monterey County Board of Supervisors, I think that was the biggest surprise for me, has written a letter in opposition of our county's project, and that's where our county Board of Supervisors has let our community down, in that it just seems funny to me that they would speak up and our county is just adding conditions or holding them their feet to the fire for their specific conditions, when if there's no conditions and no project, what are we all wasting our time about? So I encourage you to do the same. Oppose the project.
Thank you, Julie.
Leon Golden, Los Osos. I want to share with you my experience on Tuesday at the Board of Supervisors. Some rather important things happened there. First of all, and I've attended the Board of Supervisors on too many occasions. And usually all the old folks have come in to tell about their complaints, et cetera, and to try to influence the board. This time, the vast majority were young people. It was very encouraging, at least to me. And they had the facts at their command, and they knew what they were asking for, and they asked for it. And I feel that if the Board of Supervisors comes out with a good letter, when you can have a guaranteed profit, and when you mess up, you don't have to do anything. Just raise the rates, and that takes care of it. And the other that is very important here is that, you know, everyone around us has taken a position against this. And it's a good position to say, don't license this at all. And it's one that we should join, because we owe it to the people whose economy will be impacted. And if their economy is going to be impacted, rest assured, we will be hurt also. And last but not least, one of the people who spoke at the Tuesday event spoke about. Let me just finish here.
No, that's it, Leonard.
Wait, just.
No,
just
that's it. That's it. Time's up. Let's go.
Well, I hope somebody else will talk about what it'll do to humans who might make the mistake of going into the water.
Hi, my name is Amanda Lambert. I live in Los Osos, and I'm speaking tonight on my own behalf as well as my 12-year-old son, Cisco, who just studied this project in seventh grade at Laguna. He's passionately interested in what I have to say here tonight and what many of these people have to say. I have a question for you. In order to confirm the existence of fault lines that we already know about and about which we can do nothing, would you authorize explosions whose noise at about 250 decibels would kill people? Further, would you ask taxpayers to foot the $64 million bill? As absurd as that sounds, our elected representatives are actually considering allowing such explosions in the form of this seismic testing, albeit underwater. It makes it a little more comfortable, maybe. It's a little bit further away from our air-breathing selves. I can only think that there must be a ton of money at stake for our leaders to even entertain this madness. Otherwise, why would our government consider ignoring and overriding the professional opinions of the very scientists it hired to study the disastrous and probably lethal effects of this seismic testing? Please restore my flagging faith in local government, in government in general. Please hear my voice. Please hear the voices of the whales, which many biologists believe are more intelligent than we are. Please hear the voices of all the good people opposing this project. Oppose this obscene madness that is seismic testing. It's destroyed marine life everywhere it's happened so far, and it will destroy marine life here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tim Litzel, Los Osos. Someone wanted to mention about the people in the water. A very good point was brought up the other day at the Board of Supervisors that how are we going to keep all the people out of the water? What damage will it do to people that do get in the water? Are we going to put someone every 100 feet that has the ability to arrest to keep people out of the water? That's a lot of deputies. At that Board of Supervisors meeting, Dr. Blakesley, Senator Blakesley, gave a very interesting speech to the board. It was exceptionally interesting in that he addressed the actual elephant in the room. In his oblique way, he suggested that Diablo should not be there, the nuclear plant should not be there at all anyway, period. I truly believe that, and so many other people do, but this gentleman actually has a lot of credentials to back it up. It is a very good time and a very good opportunity to oppose this seismic testing, as another oblique way of finally maturing beyond nuclear power. We've outgrown it. It's time to move on. These plants are up in 2024, 2025, the end of their license. Let them retire. Let's move on to other and better and cleaner things.
Fault. He and others knew that that fault was there, and he testified before Congress that they should never allow PG&E to build the Diablo Canyon where they proposed to build it. Having said all of that, it's very interesting to realize that someone who is no longer here was so smart and knew so much and gave such wonderful testimony, and yet Congress just said, no, we're going to let it go. PG&E is a very powerful company. They use that power to do what they wish, to use whatever they can do to make money. Money is the, shall we call it, traditional way of getting ahead in this world and in this community, where we find that we, the taxpayers, are the ones, and the residents are the ones that are being subjected to problems that will continue until they, PG&E, license is no longer valid, and the Coastal Commission says, we've had it. You do not need to have an extension on your permit. You no longer will be allowed to, shall we call it, subsidize their funding, your funding, with the lives of public. No permit. This letter that you have written is the most weasel wording letter I've heard or read in a very long time. It's unfortunate where you say, only after the environmental and economic impacts have been properly addressed and mitigated, compensation for negative impacts on affected communities be addressed. Why? Just say no. Just say no. We in this community and this county have come together, like Gwen Pelfrey said, it's an item that all of the county has come together. Why do you not take a stand and say no?
Okay, no other public comment, then we'll go ahead and close public comment and bring back to the board. I would like to, if we can structure our discussion, I think would be helpful. I think to me the threshold question is, what kind of letter do you want to write, first of all? So I think that the question that we should first discuss is whether you want to do, no letter, or do you want to do this kind of letter, or do you want to do an opposition letter? And I think that will give us context. David.
Marshall, I think that the letter that is proposed is a start, but it needs to be changed. And I would propose the following wordsmithing.
Well, David, before we get to wordsmithing, let's just talk about concepts.
Okay.
Do we want to oppose?
Well, if I just say the first change would be, instead of concerns about in the first paragraph, I would change that to opposition to. That would tell you where this is coming from.
Well, no, I understand that. But
okay.
If we strike out expressing its concern about, I would put in opposing. And
okay,
then
opposing.
delete as currently proposed. But that's I think we need to discuss whether we want to go there or not, because I don't know that we have a consensus on the board.
My position in this is that all we know are that there are potential benefits that we may see as a result of the seismic testing. We speak in this letter of enhancement of current seismic protection. What do we know that PG&E will actually do as a result of this testing? We don't. But we do know that it will cause harm. The only thing we don't know is the full extent of the harm, both to the communities, to the fish, to the marine mammals. But it will cause harm, and it could be irreparable harm. I mean, eventually ecosystems recover.
I understand it, but so you would be a proponent of sending an opposition letter?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's enough. Okay, letter. We'll come back to the wordsmithing after we decide what approach we're going to take, because there's no sense to talk about an approach or wordsmithing if we're not going to take that approach.
Mike? Well, I'd like to speak to why I would take that approach.
We'll get to that.
Not yet.
Okay. I thought you just did.
I don't think I had a full...
Okay, fine.
Okay,
I'd
like
chance.
To express that more clearly, okay? There is no mechanism in place to guarantee adequate compensation to the communities. There is insufficient information that we would be proceeding with, and yet we would be using dramatic... the testing would cause dramatic impact, and yet we don't even know what kind of impact it will cause. So there's far too little that we know at this point.
Tim, for expressing
their views, and I'm opposed.
Okay.
I'm actually in support of the letter, and I would I could see adding some language that, about the aquifer as well, in terms of you know, putting something in there about determining, just adding that to one of our concerns.
Okay. So I think Do you have anything else to add?
No.
So I think I always get to go last, and it's already determined by the time it gets to me. So no, I think we should go with the opposition letter. And what I think we should do, though, I agree with what's been said by this. Well, first of all, by Craig. I think that the new voices out here and new people, we always like to see new people involved, and I think it's really important to get people involved on issues they're interested in and, you know, other community issues. So we really appreciate that. But so I think, you know, with that being said, that we have the majority to write this opposition letter, I basically heard two things that, David, we're going to wordsmith now. I basically heard two things. I think we should change that first paragraph to take out the clearly, express concern, and whether we put in the word opposition or opposing doesn't really matter
opposing
to me.
Opposing.
And then I would delete those last, I would delete those last three words as currently proposed. The next paragraph in this letter comes almost word for word from Morro Bay City's letter. That's where that language came from.
I would change in the second line in front of the word the benefits, the third from the last word in the second line. I would say potential benefits because I don't think they've clearly stated them as benefits.
Okay. They're potential hazards as well.
And I apologize. I said the second paragraph came from Morro Bay. It's the third paragraph. My mistake. yeah. No, I took that. That almost came word for word from the Morro Bay letter. So in the second paragraph, I think if you want to go there, I think the key thing that's being expressed here is that everybody wants to be aware that there's marine and seaside impacts, but there's also landside impacts. And I think that's a critical thing that needs to be distinct, that you have to look at both aspects of it. The second paragraph, to correct what I said, Ms. Tacker, the second paragraph came almost word for word from the Monterey County letter. So just to show you that we did read all the other letters. So, but I think if we go ahead and change potential, that third paragraph came word for word from Morro Bay's letter.
I have no changes.
We'll give Rob Schultz credit for writing that one then, apparently. And then I would suggest before we get to the last paragraph that the other thing that came up was the idea about concerns specific to our community. And I think the idea about the seawater or the impact on the aquifer is major. And I just wrote some stuff out really quickly, and I think this is something we just have to trust to wordsmith out overnight so we can get this letter out in the morning. But I think something to the effect of specific concerns by our district that need to be addressed before any project proceeds is the impact on our water aquifer, the only water supply for our community, or something to that effect. But I think we need to make it clear it's before any project proceeds that our aquifer needs to be studied, and it is our only source of water. So I would propose something to that effect.
Well, the only thing I'd add to that is I think we have the data about, we should mention specifically how far out our aquifer goes.
Well, yeah, we can, you know, extends 3 miles or whatever. I don't know.
Right. Get some perspective.
Any other
Let me ask you this. Excuse me.
Yeah, David.
Sure. Yeah, in the first line on the last paragraph, after the word permits, I would insert the word not.
Well, let's wait. Let's hold off on the last. Let's talk about this localized impact.
Where do you
issue.
See the aquifer issue being brought in?
That's what I'm saying. We would add a fourth paragraph there with specific concerns. So it would be at the after that, our concerns. I think we would change that to say our general concerns or something that would qualify that, and then follow it up with a paragraph that say specific concerns to our community are the impacts on the water aquifer.
Well, I think that the concerns on the third paragraph should be changed to opposition to go along with the first paragraph. Because, I mean, we're opposed.
Yeah, that makes sense. Then we can use David's word opposition.
Our opposition is based.
Right. No, I like that. That makes it consistent from right there. So then we add the fourth paragraph that, if you guys will trust me, will work out, basically saying we need to address the localized impacts on our aquifer, our only water supply, and then just add some documentation and detail as far as the extent of that out into the ocean.
I agree with that. Can we also put in some sentence just about the land, again, about the
potential land side impacts. For example, liquefaction, an impact on structural stability. Is that good?
Yeah. Marshall, I would put a period after the word project in the first line and say urges that the permits not be issued for the project, period. At present, and then I would cross out only after, I would say the environmental and economic impacts have not been properly addressed and mitigated, comma, nor is there a mechanism in place to guarantee adequate compensation for negative impacts on affected communities. Then I would close, after putting in the liquefaction comment, by saying the full impact of this testing would only be learned after irreparable damage may have already been done.
No, I disagree with that. I couldn't allow that.
Please.
That we don't have these kind of facts. So why not put "may not"?
Can you go over the first part?
Okay. On this basis, the board urges that the permits not be issued for the project, period. At present, the environmental and economic impacts have not been properly addressed and mitigated, comma, nor is there a mechanism in place to guarantee adequate compensation for negative impacts on affected communities, period. I would take out the next two lines. And now we can work on this.
Okay, get the first part done at present, environmental and economic impacts have not
been properly addressed and mitigated, comma, nor is there a mechanism in place to guarantee adequate compensation.
Okay. The last sentence, I agree with Director Moodhart, is problematic.
Okay, and that can be crafted.
Or eliminated.
Okay, so anybody else have comments at this point? And then we can look at the last sentence, I guess. Nobody else has a comment? So, David, do you want to read that last sentence again?
Okay, sure. At present, the environmental and economic impacts have not been presently...
No, I've got that. It was the last sentence.
Oh, okay. The full impact of this testing would only be learned after irreparable damage may already have been done.
I don't think we need that sentence because
I think so too. It's dramatic, but it doesn't add a lot other than drama.
Drama. I hear a lot of drama.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so what do we have?
It's good.
Okay, so
it's actually dramatic.
So basically what I have is that we're going to go ahead, or what we're looking at is taking that first paragraph, delete expressing its concern, and I'll get you the copy, Ann, since I have the original. So there you go. Expressing its concern about, and replacing that with the word opposing, deleting those last three words, which are as currently proposed. And then before the word benefits in the second line of the second paragraph, insert the word potential. And then in the third paragraph, insert the word our opposition is based. And then the fourth paragraph would be specific concerns about impact on the water aquifer and potential landside impacts such as liquefaction and impact on structural integrity. The last paragraph, but then on this basis, the board urges the permit not be issued for the project, period. At present, environmental impacts have not been properly addressed and mitigated.
Nor
is there a mechanism in place to guarantee adequate compensation, period. End of letter.
So what we're saying is there's no way that they should do this in no way. Even if they do all the things we're suggesting, they still shouldn't get a permit. Is that what we're
Unless
saying?
They have an answer to
we're not.
We're asking
well, that's
them to provide.
Quite a crystal ball on both sides. You know, I don't know where we get this crystal ball from.
I don't think that's what's being said, though. I think if the environmental and economic impacts have been properly addressed, we can revisit the issue. We're not saying that under those circumstances a permit can never be issued.
Well, and I think the City of Morro Bay's letter is where this environmental and economic impacts have been properly addressed language.
Letter as amended.
I'll second that.
Okay, moved by Director Vogel, seconded by Director Wright. Any more discussion?
Just one.
Yes, Director Baltimore.
Just rereading the letter with my notes on here. I do believe it says that we oppose the project, but as it currently stands, however, if there's a mechanism for compensation in that environmental impacts,
I appreciate that comment because that gets back to the deletion of those first three words in the first paragraph, and maybe you want to leave those.
No.
Okay.
No.
That addresses that concern, but that's kind of a qualifier that kind of negates the previous change if you leave it there.
No.
I think that's clearly the intent that you're opposing the project as it's proposed now, but. That's because there's concerns about these potential impacts that need to be identified, and then if they are actual impacts, they need to be mitigated prior to the actual implementation, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, I think the words at present give that...
Well, we're taking it out as
it stands.
No, we're not taking it out at present.
No, I think...
as presently proposed?
No, what you say issued for the project, period.
I got it.
At present,
I'm sorry.
The environmental...
I was thinking we were talking about the first paragraph.
Okay. And that addresses the concern that this could never be granted.
Right. Well, it can't because who's defining mitigation? Not one, if I asked everybody in this room, everybody would have a different answer of what it means to be mitigated. And therefore, this could be held up in any number of ways. It's not mitigated. I didn't get my check yet. I haven't, I've got, there's so many things that you could say. So mitigation is just, it's a word. It's not a scientific word in terms of a definite answer. That's kind of where I'm coming from. Just as a scientist, I see too. I have to think of it much more objectively than subjectively. And what I hear is a lot of subjective good points. There are a lot of good points out there. That's why I like the way the letter was originally written. But that's me being kind of on the fence in terms of trying to ride this in an objective way and being able to see both sides. I must admit, if you haven't picked up, I do appreciate having electricity, and I do appreciate all the things that PG&E and doing the county. I don't mean that in the sense that I believe they should have free reign of anything they want, but I believe they could be a lot worse than what we have. That's where my objectives. My objection to being directly opposed to the letter lies. I do appreciate everybody's concerns. It's just the way I view how to address those concerns.
Excuse me.
I did listen while you were talking, and there was a bunch of people that are not listening to one word I had to say, so please.
And I have to tell you, for those of you who have not sat up here before, that sound just comes up here. I mean, it's really bad. So, so any further discussion? We have a motion and a second. Okay, let's take a roll call, Ann.
Director Vogel.
Yes.
Director Wright.
Yes.
Director Baltimore.
Yes.
Vice President Muthart.
No.
President O'Hillsky.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, with that then, we'll move on to our regular agenda. First item on our agenda is public comment on items not on the agenda.
Okay. I'm Gary Freiberg, and I have some good news. I am here with some good news. There's a new community resource that we have that's called Estero Bay Radio, and a lot of people haven't heard of it yet. It's EsteroBayRadio.com, and next month in December, it is going to become an FM station, 97.3, and it will broadcast in the Estero Bay region. They're still building, the station is still building its format. It plays a lot of uninterrupted music. For my taste, it's a lot of great music. There's no commercial. And there are some talk shows. And so about 2 months ago, I started a program called Anything Goes. And it's live on Friday, and then it's rebroadcast four times during the week. And I do a combination of things, interviews, and I've had local movie makers and authors and musicians. Tomorrow, my guest, we were able to get underwriting to help with the costs, and that encouraged two other businesses, Central Coast Music and then another hair salon, Amores Salon in San Luis. But it's from our two Baywood Park businesses that that showed that supporting our community radio is a good thing. I invite anyone, I want to say this real fast, that has a talent or a suggested topic that they'd like to talk about on Anything Goes. I've got the freedom to do it. I can be contacted at G. Freiberg, and it's F-R-E-I-B-E-R-G at AOL.com. I'm very receptive to input. And meanwhile, you go to EsteroBayRadio.com, the list to listen button's on the right-hand side, and you can see what the listening schedule is. So I think that we can all take advantage of what is truly a great community resource and potentially even a better one, a bigger one, over the ensuing years. So thank you.
Thank you. Brian?
Frank Casilio. Because this issue was brought up at the Board of Supervisors on October 30th about the entry fee into Montana Dora, I'm going to bring up some questions that I have that I still am not getting answers to. One of the things is that they talk about the entrance fee. I'm starting to hum. Entry fees be $5 a day or $25 a year for a pass. I'd like to know what kind of guarantee is that going to be for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years? So those questions, you know, I haven't heard that answer yet. All the money that is raised, is it guaranteed to remain locally? Well, that's true, maybe. You raise a couple hundred thousand here from the fees collected. You take away $100,000 over here by the state for the budget. It's not difficult. They've done it before, hundreds of times. So I, you know, when they talk about, yeah, all this money we're going to raise is going to help the park. Not if the state has anything to say with it. They see money, they're going to cut. And they've done that before. All those entering on bike or foot would be exempt. I'd still like to know where they're going to park. That road is very narrow. There's only a few places that one can park, maybe a few cars there. And what about the erosion that could occur by people trying to park in places where it's not where you can't park currently, but they'll make parking areas out of the side of the road? And what damage will that occur? And what about the safety of people because of the road being jammed, that responders, first responders, may not be able to get to the park because there could be a clutter of cars? That'll come up hopefully in an environmental report, and it'll clarify that. I don't understand why the county has not done a financial impact report study on the park to see how much money is brought in by visitors to that park. Because the county did have the opportunity at one time to pay $50,000 a year, and it wouldn't be any charge to people visiting parks, but they decided to decline on that. The other issue is I brought up at LOCAC about we're number one again in this county throughout the state for having the highest gas prices. I'm confused why no government body like yours or the County Board of Supervisors, PISMO, Tascadero Council, anybody is bringing this issue up. Why are we paying more for gas in this county than places like Humboldt County, Indio County, Yolo County? I mean, you name it. There's places in the middle of nowhere. But we are paying high prices. You are paying high prices for gas for our vehicles here that you have jurisdiction over. So I'd like to, you know, public officials to start asking these questions, to bring it forward to those maybe in our Senate or in the Assembly that can do something about this.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you. Gwen.
Good evening. I, too, am very concerned about this kiosk at entrance of Diablo, of Fontana de Oro. One of the things that was brought out at the hearing of the Board of Supervisors previously is the fact that this community pays for the emergency services that are or first responders that are needed at the park. And yet this community continues to be charged for all kinds of things that we supply and the county and the state do not take into consideration. The fact that the money that is to be used for this kiosk and the development of the park, Fontana de Oro, is subsidizing the golf at Morro Bay Golf Park. We in this community may like to play golf, but maybe we don't. But why should the people who pay the taxes, why should this community pay the bills for all of the infrastructure of the emergency services there at the state park? It's a state park.
Thank you, Gwen. Al?
Thank you. My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low-Income Housing. And I keep abreast of the housing supply and the housing demand. Our housing stock does not match our low-income working force. Workforce housing is very short supply. Even people that are homeless, if they have jobs, can't find affordable housing. So even if you gave a homeless person a check for their housing, it would be very challenging for them to find housing here. This is a very difficult situation, and it exacerbates homelessness. So I just want to bring out the fact how necessary it is, and if anybody wants to take a shot at these, Mr. Margeson's yearly promotion for funding the homeless shelter, how important that is. And to come to those events, there's a lot of good deals that you can get from there because people donate products, and I think that they are to be commended for the work that they do every year. So please do not forget to show up. Regarding our water supply, I went to the rain event with my camera and took pictures of the site out here that's supposed to be restored. And the picture showed a lot of water coming on that site, and I couldn't understand how much water there was there because it just didn't make sense with the rainfall and all that there would be that much. And then I noticed that the county had built a culvert across the street. Instead of letting the water run all the way down to Ravenna and bypass the site, they put it right on the site. Very destructive, not very intelligent, not very good engineering, and certainly does not save any of that water, which we need desperately. So my question to you is, if it's in the basin, if it's in the district zone, why shouldn't you have a say-so in what goes on? And I also think that we need to ask the county to make the drainage more effective and make it percolate into the groundwater upslope rather than wait till it gets down by the bay. The Palisades well is basically non-functional. We lost, this is one half of our water supply that we're losing. We are in a serious crisis, and I don't see anybody getting upset about it.
You should be very upset about it. That's our water supply. I hope that at some point that this board will put it on the agenda to discuss the future of our water supply and what we're going to do, because we're now seeing seawater intrusion destroying all the infrastructure that we replace at Palisades Well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening again, Julie Tacker. I would ask the board if they would pull item 5G to discuss the Palisades Well, if you wouldn't mind. I'd like to see a broader discussion than having it on the consent calendar later tonight. A couple of things. Have been reading about the Los Osos CSD management planning meeting. Sorry, the planning meeting of December 11th. It's the draft agenda is on your website, and as I went through it, there's reference to a consultant, and I guess I missed when we were hiring a consultant to help us do our. I think this is our strategic planning. So it's already November. This would be the time to hire someone, unless you're going to hire them the first meeting in December. Something's confusing about that. And I would object to hiring a consultant for that. The Water Conservation Plan implementation plan was passed a week ago Tuesday by the Board of Supervisors. We haven't gotten a definitive answer on how that really affects the groundwater management, how much water will be saved by the program. The program itself is off and running to a limping start. If you call the contact number, information's coming out. I've run out of time.
Thank you.
I'll be back later.
Richard?
Richard Margetson. I want to talk about some more about the implementation plan. I made some comments in closed session, but since this meeting is going out to the community. The plan was approved. It was changed dramatically from its original version. Leonard gave comments at the Board of Supervisors, and if anybody's interested in seeing how well he advocated for the community, go into the October 23rd meeting on the Board of Supervisors website and hit the watch button for that meeting, and his comments are at about 4:01 into the meeting. Mr. Gibson took exception with some of Leonard's comments, saying that they had been addressed, the $5 million concern that you had, you know, that all the money spent, the 50-gallon per capita as, you know, kind of the goal that, you know, that's all they have to hit, and his comments about that he believed the plan was written by a lawyer. Mr. Gibson took exception to those comments. Well, that at his office hours this month, there was extensive discussion. There were only three members of the public at his office hours, so we had an opportunity to question the plan and where they're going. At office hours, which wasn't on camera, Mr. Gibson said, first time we've heard this publicly, that he's looking to see how the toilet retrofit part of the program goes, and if we're below 50 or at 50, going back to the state and asking them, you know, to stop the program, and whatever's spent will be covered by the project, and whatever's left will not be. He's asking for an addendum to that condition. He also doesn't believe that we have to get to less than 50 gallons. The condition, I'm going to read right from the condition. The water conservation required by the county project, which limits indoor use to no more than 50 gallons. It doesn't say we have to get to 50. It says we can't use more than 50 gallons. Leonard also took exception to the idea that the water purveyors weren't involved. Mr. Gibson took exception to that. It says right in condition 99, a water conservation program shall be developed by the applicant in consultation with the local water purveyors. The plan was put out 2 weeks before the Board of Supervisors meeting, and I find that date very convenient. The next day was a utility committee meeting in Los Osos. The day after that was LOCAC, and a week later is your CSD meeting. They've dragged their feet on this because and put this plan out with all these revisions because they didn't want another set of eyes looking at it. It's dramatically changed, and it's not to the advantage of this community.
Thank you, Richard. Any other public comment? Okay, seeing none, we'll close general public comment. So I guess we're ready to move on. Does staff have any comments? I would just have one quick comment, just in regard to the $5 million here. I think the board has been consistent, and going back to when this condition was included in the Coastal Commission development permit, we were insistent that the $5 million be entirely spent. It'd be spent as rapidly as possible, and it'd be spent as efficiently as possible. And that's been our position forever, and I assume it will continue to be our position. So I appreciate Director Muthart expressing those concerns before the board in my absence. So I think that, anybody else have comments on that? Otherwise, we'll go into our regular agenda. Do you have something?
Craig's got something.
Oh, I'm sorry, Craig.
Yeah, rather than wait to the end, what Frank and Gwen brought up is I think something we should look at, or at least have staff directed to look at, and that is that the county has always given us not inadequate money for parks and recs, claiming that we have the state parks around us. Now that they're going to start charging a fee for Montaña de Oro, that means the county should be augmenting our parks and recs budget, and or all that money that comes, it's supposed to come locally, comes directly to us. So anyway, it's something that we need to investigate, and whether we have to do it as a board first or have staff look at it, I'd like that to be brought up.
Yeah, I think, our district has parks and rec power, so that's one of our authorized power. So I think we can just have staff look into it and get us a report back, but I appreciate that. One of the things I've been concerned about since I got on the board was that we have Parks and Rec power, but we don't do anything with it, and we're not.
In terms of with Montaña de Oro, do we get any compensation for
our? We get an answer from the expert right now.
So,
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question, please?
Yeah. So the issue was raised that we're spending funds out of our district for you providing emergency services to Montaña de Oro. Can you just address that briefly? If not, you can bring it back next meeting.
The history on that is, as a South Bay Fire Department, you have traditionally, your firefighters have traditionally gone out into Montaña de Oro as a customer service to the citizens who have used the park for quite a while, at least through the last two chiefs, I believe. There was some time when fire departments were a little bit more territorial and didn't go out, but at least the last chief or two has gone out prior to my arrival. Under Chief Pickens, he had a very good rule where they would go west of Petro Valley to the bluffs to help people, but they didn't want to go up the hiking trails. When Chief Turner came in and started working with Mr. Buell and Chief Pickens and was negotiating how the regional response would come under a county fire station here, and we expanded that response. And so now your firefighters respond anywhere in Montaña de Oro with an engine coming backfill in behind you to cover the district. There is no compensation like 9I for going out there. With the thought process is we need to get firefighters to any emergency as quickly as possible, and Station 15 is the closest to Montaña de Oro.
Okay, that's good information.
I think that's excellent. Okay, with that then we'll move on to our administrative and committee reports. The chief give the CAL FIRE. Whatever. Go take it away.
I understand. Mr. President, members of the board, members of the public, I certainly appreciate the opportunity once again to come before you for
and report the September chief's or fire manager report. Prior to starting that, there's a couple of things I'd like to bring to your attention. One is we had a very successful open house, and I'd like to publicly thank the Vaughn's Shopping Center, San Luis Ambulance, San Luis Sheriffs, and all the other cooperators, including the Emergency Services Committee members and the Board of Directors who showed up and participated. We had a very good turnout, and I'll give you a better detailed report on that in my October report. You have heard and you've been briefed by your general manager that the state of California has been sending out letters to some of your citizens for the fire prevention fee to give some answers to some of those questions. I've provided some frequently asked question pages. They're at the back of the room, so the members of the public can take a peek at those, and you now have a copy of them yourselves. I'm not going to go through them, but I just want to make sure you're aware that those have been distributed. Last month, at this board meeting, one of your members or one of your public asked a question about Code 3 or driving in the fire engines and ambulances and sheriffs and CHP's vehicles. I talked to the general manager, and she asked me to provide a quick answer to that question, if it's okay. The specific question was, what do you do if you see a Code 3, or what we call Code 3, a vehicle with its lights and sirens either approaching you or coming from behind you, or as you're trying to drive down a LOVR with the mediums in between you, what are you supposed to do? The vehicle code in California is very clear. It's section 21806, and it states that when you see a vehicle coming at you exhibiting a siren and at least one steady burning red light visible under normal conditions, every driver shall yield the right-of-way and shall immediately drive to the right-hand edge of the road or the curb of the highway, clear of any intersection, and stop and remain stopped until the emergency vehicle passes, if it's safe to do so. If you're walking down the road, you need to move to the edge of the road, the curb. So kind of summarizing that, the reason we drive Code 3 is not to get there as quickly as possible or to see how high the RPMs can go in our engines. It's the goal is to get to the call as safely as possible at a good, safe, steady speed. Speeding up and slowing down, is more wear and tear. It's actually more dangerous for our operators, and it's more dangerous for the community. So the goal is, to drive straight and steady, and that's why when we turn our lights on, if people pull over, we don't have to stop, go forward, move around, and do all that maneuvering. So CAL FIRE Station 15, I'd like to remind the folks, and if they see or hear a siren or see a light, to pull over to the right if it's safe to do so. And once you're there, keep your foot on the brake. That way everyone understands that you're stopped and your brake lights are on. If you're there, wait for the vehicle to go by. Make sure that there's not two vehicles, because remember that Station 15 typically responds at least two vehicles, sometimes more out of there. And so sometimes first vehicle go by, they pull back into the lane, and there's another vehicle. So please look behind you, pull over to the furthest lane away from the accident, and try and give the emergency workers shelter. So that's, I believe, a quick little answer to the question that we had. Yes, sir.
You had said that there was a procedure to be done if you're going in one direction and the vehicle is approaching you across a median.
Well, I did start the process. I appreciate you asking that question. The law is very clear that regardless if there's a median or not, if you hear a siren or you see a light, then you need to pull over. So a lot of times people go, it's over on the other side, I don't need to. That's still in violation of the law.
Okay.
I have a question.
Any other questions on that?
No.
Okay. Just a couple more quick things before I start here. It's approaching Christmas time, and CAL FIRE's Benevolent Association, in cooperation with Operation Santa Claus, have joined with the Season of Hope, sponsored by KSBY. KSBY and some of the other stations have been doing a very good job of advertising it. So we started a little bit early for Operation Santa Claus. There is a bucket now up at Station 15, as well as the other county fire stations and our cooperators like Morro Bay Fire Department. All of these folks are now both accepting toys, as we always have, for Child Protective Services, but we are now also accepting food under the Season of Hope, which will be given to local food banks. There's a press release out, and there's some information in the back as well. Almost, but not quite finally, we are in the process of hiring firefighters. Tomorrow is our final filing date, so if there's anyone out in the audience or out listening to this who is interested in becoming a reserve firefighter, there's your opportunity right there. We are accepting applications until tomorrow. It's been open for about a week and a half now. So tomorrow, Friday, is our final filing date. And if you'd like more information, you can contact Station 15. We can help you out with that. I can start with the Chief's Report. You have before you the September 2012 Chief's Report. In the month of September, we responded to 111 calls out of Station 15. Three of those are simultaneous. And of those three, two of them required advanced life support. 67 of those 111 calls were medical aids, with 33 of those requiring advanced life support. There were no traffic collisions, and there were five incidents reported as fires. Company 15 returned back a total of seven times to assist Station 15. We met with HDR and the San Luis County Public Works to try and discuss the upcoming sewer installation project. Of course, it started right by now. Topics of the couple-hour meeting included public construction worker and emergency worker safety to make sure that we're all on the same page and discuss their capabilities and our capabilities of what we could do to protect each other, and identifying methods of communication between Station 15 and the project coordinators. We also talked about how we can implement future safety projects for the community. Station 15 staff is planning a trench rescue course, a state fire marshal trench rescue course. That course is actually now scheduled and will begin on the 16th, 17th, and 18th of November. Firefighter Chris Rhodes finished his rookie book and began working shadow shifts. We'll have him before you to be sworn in the next month or two. Once his schedule lines up, he is an ambulance attendant in the Valley, a paramedic, so it's good to have him on, but it's very difficult to line his shifts up with board meetings. As I've previously stated, we did apply for the Fireman Funds Insurance grant. We applied for laryngoscopes to intubate patients, structure boots for the firefighters, and carbon monoxide and smoke detectors. In this report, which was written quite a while ago, we said we were still waiting for information. We thought we'd have it in October. Here it is, the 1st of November, and I have not heard, although I did get information that they did receive it and were processing our request. And on September 18th, the San Luis County Fire Safe Council Focus Group had a routine meeting at Station 15 with staff, and we discussed future hazard abatement grants and how to do a one-day or two-day workday in the areas we abated last spring. I can say I do have a little bit of information on that. We did receive money for a chipping grant, one of the three grants we applied for. We're still trying to figure out how to process that. This will be in addition to what the district does itself, and it looks to be a little bit more in-depth, trying to get out to the field. It's been a couple days work hard, so the Willow area, the Andre area, out towards Scenic Way in that area. As you follow along, if you kind of make a right-hand turn at Los Osos Valley Road, then the mobile home parks, the Bayview Heights area, are in SRA, or a portion of the Bayview Heights area, I should say, are in SRA. If you come along the top of Highland, I believe all of Highland is, or a portion of the Highland Road area is in SRA, and then Cabrillo Heights, and as we follow out towards the ocean, it kind of comes across, and in the Seahorse Lane area and Seascape area is also in SRA. That's a very, very generic explanation. I'm sorry?
Director Baltimore.
I can't understand.
So, fire engine, we're on schedule to receive it in January? No.
It'll be a little bit later than that. And just to follow up to your question, Mr. Wright, if anybody has and I'll get to you in a second, Mr. Bowen, or Director Baltimore. If anybody has questions on where they are, if they go to fireprevention.fee.org, and that's on the frequently asked questions we have in the back, there is a way to put your address in and determine where you are in relation to that line. Station 15 South Bay does have maps that very graphically show the lines that you're looking for, and we've spent a lot of time this week working with people and trying to provide that information. I didn't bring those maps tonight, though.
That's fine.
I think it's also important for people, it's not your fault, but the fee does not stay in Los Osos as far as our fire district. It goes to the state general fund.
It is a fire prevention fee that goes back to Sacramento, and then it will be reallocated for fire prevention projects throughout California, yes.
But not specific to our area?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Okay. Director Baltimore with the fire engine update.
Oh, it's just the delivery date, that's all.
Okay.
Well, it's a complicated story, but it is under construction.
It is under construction. It is painted now. The cab and the chassis are painted. We believe that the cab and the chassis have been mated together. And they're now colored and painted. They'll probably be moving out to the plant sometime this week, if not last week. Of course, that was before the big storm back east. We anticipate that it'll be in Minnesota, though, sometime soon, that we'll be receiving the final designs for it, because once it gets to Minnesota and they start to build it, we'll need those designs for them to actually start work. We're still waiting on that, haggling a little bit on this is and that's. When that happens, they'll be able to start working on it. Once they start working on it, we'll be given a website login, and so you'll be able to go to that website, and they'll take pictures of it, and they'll show you'll be able to see daily progress on it, and so I'll have that available for the board and any of the other general public that would like to see it. We believe that once it gets there, it'll be approximately 2 to 2.5 months to get the buildup. Once that's done, we'll send a couple folks out to South Dakota to take a peek at it. They will test it. They will drive it, check paint depths. They'll make sure that it pumps. They'll be looking at welds. It's a 4-day process to make sure that it's actually what we want and what we decided. Once that is done and we approve it and accept it, it'll be driven out to the Los Angeles sometime in April or so. Once it's there, it's striped. From there, it'll come back up to San Luis somewhere in early May. We'll install radios, we'll install headsets, we'll add all the equipment on, and we've been working with AMPI on equipment purchases actually the last couple of days, at least starting that process, with the expectation that sometime, worst case scenario, end of June, best case scenario, early June, we'll have it in service.
Very good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Vice President Moda.
Yeah, I just had a question. It's not off your report, but I was going through our register warrants, and I noticed that we had a check for $1,800 to B&B Garage Doors for an emergency garage door repair. I was just kind of curious about that, if that was something that was, you know, what the deal was.
We have at our fire station very large doors. And, in fact, they're one of the larger doors that the Hammond and B&B and some of the other services have that they service. There are large springs within there, and we're noticing that it was not going up very quickly, and it fell once or twice, so we called a service out there. There are springs inside there that help bring that door up, and two of the three springs were broken. So the good chunk of that was for the springs.
Okay. All right.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. With that, then, we'll go to the Utility Department report. Margaret.
I have too much else.
Let's hope somebody ran into it. Insurance.
Next month's report will reflect the new data and the graphs. Also included are figures for production and runtime hours on your well sites. And in addition to the regular duties, the crew members met with the wastewater contractor, met with the 10th Street tank inspector, repaired sample points, and installed the valve can at 13th and Napomo, and also submitted the monthly compliance report to the Department of Public Health with no violations noted. As far as the 10th Street tank is concerned, the project's moving along, and as of today, it's substantially complete. And the staff worked with the consultant for the wastewater projects, HCP, and we gave them a list of the properties here that the district owns and some maps, and gave them the capital improvement projects plus all the projects that we, you know, how we renumbered them through the water rate subcommittee. And they're trying to get a Los Osos Habitat Conservation Plan wrapped up pretty soon here. As far as drainage is concerned, the crews maintained drainage pumps at 8th and El Moro and also at 16th and Paso during the month of September. And as far as the MS4 draft permit, yesterday a new notice was posted regarding the state anticipates sending out a formal notice of opportunity to comment and notice to close of adoption no later than November 13th. So my dates in here were old. And the public comment period expected to close November 27th, which only gives us a two-week turnaround time. And they're limiting the comments to only changes from the previous draft permit. And the adoption has been revised and rescheduled for their regular meeting on December 18th in Sacramento. This draft permit is going to, there are going to be a lot of changes. I'm really curious to see how much more they've changed as far as we're concerned, because now we've been recategorized to non-traditional. And then as far as wastewater is concerned, Bay Ridge Estates and Vista de Oro subdivisions, our crews are still working with them, and the general manager is working on a to-do list for the county, and we'll report to you on that. So this concludes my report, and I'm here for any questions.
Director Wright.
10th Street, when's that going to be fully online and operational? Do you have a date yet?
They just got the BACT samples confirmed today that there was, that, you know, they have to first disinfect before they can put it back in site. But it's, they can do it now. It's ready to go.
Ready to go, okay. That's good.
Director Baltimore.
I beg your pardon? You want to talk? Yeah, they will not be putting the cathodic back into. They don't put that back in until after the 11-month period where the water's in there and they can test. We'll have the ATS dive the tank and they will test the coating on the inside. Because if you have cathodic protection on, you can't see if the coating's working. Right. So, but the final payment won't be for a while.
Okay, okay. That's kind of where my question is. So yeah. They don't empty the tank when they are going to put on at the end of 11 months in order to check the coating. They won't empty the tank.
No, he usually dives the tank.
Dive, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Director, Vice President Moodhart.
On the tank, so you mentioned anticipate when filling, but when they fill that, is that a process? I mean, is that they fill it a little bit, let it sit for a while? Do they just, do we fill it all the way up, or how do we approach that? How long would it take to fill it?
Yeah, they fill it to, I think, about 32 feet, and then it always has to be disinfected, anything, you know, after work has been done on it. So it had to sit for 24 hours.
And they test it.
And,
And then the on the your comments on the Los Osos Habitat Conservation Plan, could you just clarify the last sentence on there? You say that the utility crews have already done some of the CIPs, but you say so the list of projects generated by the subcommittee has a different prioritization. Is that something we need to bring back to the utilities and reprioritize and say scratch some things off? And
yes, it would be part of, you know, updating the water master plan.
Uh-huh.
So and have all of the, because, you know, it's a dynamic document,
and absolutely,
we do need to take some things off that have already been done and put some of the new ones on there.
Just for, what are some of the things that...
So all this information will be pre-approved prior to any construction.
For the next 25 years.
Now, obviously, it'd be updated and changed, but that's the intent of this, is to include not just the wastewater project in this, but our operations, the fire department's operations, Golden State's operations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And vacant land. This is the entire area. So, anything that's right. moving earth.
Okay.
So it's not just our operations. The county is, they have to do a comprehensive HCP in there, including our operations in that. Oh, okay. Is that clarifying?
Yeah.
It's not even gone, as far as I know, there's not even a rough draft of that plan for circulation yet. So it has to go through the environmental review process, it has to go for environmental comments, it has to go through the planning process, it has to be approved by the Coastal Commission. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at probably 18 months from now before it even gets adopted.
Okay.
So that gives us plenty of time to adjust and adapt.
Okay. So what we're saying is some of these things that we've performed have already been performed despite the permit not being it or the plan being issued or what?
Well, any kind of work in the right of way, we don't
right.
really.
Yeah. Okay.
We already have an encroachment permit, you know, for all of our work.
Okay. I'm just trying to see how it relates to the CIP. Yeah.
They need to mitigate some. Mm-hmm.
I think that's something that needs to be talked at your committee as far as how. But it's way premature at this point.
Okay, well, that's what I don't know.
I mean, it's not going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah. No. Okay.
So there will be, the county will publish the HCP before, you know, uh-huh. so there will be adequate time for review, and we can adapt and adjust our plans to the HCP.
Okay.
And they can adapt and adjust the HCP to our operations.
Okay. I'm trying to educate myself.
This is what I do for a living, so unfortunately.
I noticed that the Palisades well produced more than three-quarters the amount in 2012 that it did in 2011, but was running less than half the time. Was that because the pump was breaking down at the time, or why was it that in 2011 it was running much slower?
Yeah, the GPM at that time was in the 550 gallons per minute range,
mm-hmm.
and now it's about 750, 800.
Is that an indication that the pump's breaking down?
Well, we never could. I brought it to Dan Gilmore's attention when he was our general manager back then, and we couldn't figure out why it wasn't running at full speed, you know,
okay.
So I didn't,
and then
for lack of a
gave up
term.
The ghost, right?
And
okay.
We had to replace it, so.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so no other questions, then we'll move to the administrative department report, please.
Okay. First of all, I just wanted to thank Margaret, because she is working really hard on trying to get the compliance of what the stormwater management plan is going to be and how is it going to affect us, because there are going to be some financial issues, as well as the Los Osos Habitat Conservation Plan. One of our directors suggested to change the graphs, and I think that it was an improvement, so I just wanted to thank her for that. Our staff has been working really hard in the utilities, and as they mentioned, some of the things that they do on a regular basis is not just their water, but they're doing other things, and you'll see that they've done some things on the capital improvement when we do our annual planning session or the planning session. On my report, I just wanted to mention that the district does have items that are surplus and we're required to try and sell them. We have two specific bids for surplus. One of them is due on November 8th at 3:00 for up to, which you can do one up to three smartphones with their walkie-talkies, heavy-duty, shock-resistant, water-resistant. However, they don't work unless you have Sprint. So for those out there who are looking for good phones, two of them are still unused. It's on the Los Osos website, lososcsd.org. And then the second one is a cyclone fence. We're selling in lots of 10. That bid date is due November 20th, and there's quite a lengthy description of everything on the panels. The panels are 14 feet by 6 feet high. They're all functional. However, some have more wear and tear than others. We're going to have other surplus. We're going to have another resolution coming up, and we do have other things that have been surplused, but we're doing the ones with the highest ticket and obviously the ones that are not on our location. As for the South Bay denitrification project, this is one area, Vice President Muhart, where I can answer your question. Because the Los Osos habitat plan is not in activation now for the long-term plan, we just signed a purchase order for consulting services with SWCA Environmental Consultants to be on site because of the Moro shoulder bay snails on this project. It's a 168-square-foot building and a 5,000-gallon tank that we're putting at Nipomo and South Bay. We went to the Planning Commission. The project was approved unanimously by the Planning Commissioners, and we're moving forward. What we're planning on doing is pumping from the existing aquifer well, removing the nitrates through an ionization program, blending it with a lower aquifer well, and coming up with a extremely potable water at an extremely reasonable cost. We are requesting this in a grant process. We are still in contact with the California Department of Public Health. They are moving slowly, but there is no matching grants on this fund, so we're very excited that things are moving forward, and our district engineer is in contact with
Susan, them. If I could just interject here.
Yes, sir.
I want to make it clear to the public, because it's not clear. There's no matching fund requirements from the district.
That is correct.
Okay, it sounds like they're not giving us matching
funds. Oh, no. This is 100% funded, and there is no matching funds required by the district. Thank you, sir. I want to make sure that's clear, because this is a very important project for us, since we're on groundwater only, and we have no intentions on outsourcing. The President Chamber and I attended a meeting with the Cuesta College President Stork, who talked about the upcoming accreditation issues, the effects on Prop 30 on the ballot, and community resources that are available. So I suggest that if you are looking for some customer service skills for your employees or stuff, there's readily available sources available even on Saturdays. As mentioned previously, we are going to have on Tuesday, December 11th, it'll be at South Bay Station number 15. The question is whether it'll be at 6 or 7, we're polling, but right now the information on the website says 7. What we're looking at is we're getting action statement forms, and it actually shows you the draft agenda and how to write an action statement so that we can have the board prioritize these in tiers, so we can have an action plan for 2003 calendar year, fiscal year, and then long-term with graded areas all the way from maybe tier to 5. We're looking for people who may or may not be able to attend the meeting, and we're looking for their input. So if you have any questions, I would really encourage everybody to go and look at the website and see if there's anything that you think the district could be doing to forward ourselves in the years ahead. At the last meeting, the board was asked to contact Dig Los Osos and invite him to attend a board meeting. Michelle Hauser is available as a community liaison, and she can take questions from Los Osos residents as well as the board of directors. Regarding the construction of the project, Jim Brantley is also available on construction-related items. They have an office on 10th, and they have limited hours right now. We have information that's available, and I am on their website, so I get their information. I also get information from ARV and RW RASIC, and so RASIC is between, well, ARV is on Los Olivos, and that's one of the more difficult streets, because there's a lot of pipes and various things, and being that it's an industrial area and there's just a lot going on. But between Ravina and Palisades, continuing to 9th Street and then also going down 9th Street, they're going to be doing a lot of work on there between the hours of 7:30 to 3:30 Ninth Street and 8:30 to 3:30 at LOVR. They're going to try and they're going to narrow it down. They're going to keep the flow of the traffic going. But if you do travel during those times, you might want to extend the hours until this is done. We did do two drainage pumps, and we're very happy that the weather cooperated with us, one at Bay Ridge and the other one, pump number two at 8th Street, which is an area that we're always of concern. Staff has worked really hard on repairing the 1999 F-315 utility truck. We did some of the mechanical work, and I'm very pleased. I'll have a report for that on the next time. And we did do a utility billing process where we had a two-sided insert. One was recommended irrigation schedule. Water conservation efforts was the theme. And then we also gave some Diglososos information in case somebody did not have that. And on the other side, provided information on the billing process. Also, I don't know if anybody else has mentioned it, but the Belos Osos Kiwanis came in and asked us to invite everybody to the week before Thanksgiving at a holiday tri-tip sale. You can contact Steve Osler's group at 528-0100. And this is Thursday, November 15th from 3 to 6. For $20, you get a delicious whole-cooked tri-tip for $20. And that is my report, and I'm available for any questions.
Yes, Director. I told Director Muthart I'd start with his side. Any questions over here? Okay, seeing none. Greg?
Just real quick. So the repairs on the truck, it's still estimated to be under the $21,000 budgeted?
Definitely. Okay. Mechanical work has almost been completed, and we have years guarantee, and it looks like I've got it up to about $1,000 without I had it up to $1,600 with all of the mechanical work and the seat, but because they needed the truck, the seat didn't get done. So, but we're doing it in phases, so the mechanical should be done. They picked it up today.
All right, thank you. No other questions, then we'll move to the committee reports. The first committee is Emergency Services Advisory Committee. The committee met on October the 23rd. We had a financial update, and the committee recommended to approve the equity closeout of fiscal year 2011 and 12, and the committee recommended that we approve the budget adjustments for fiscal year 2012 and 2013. That was a pretty straightforward discussion, I think. There was a review of the monthly fire department reports. There was an update on the fire department or the fire engine purchase. There was an update also on a Station 15 office project. They're actually going ahead and upgrading and updating the front office and creating a lobby in the building for the public and trying to reuse as much of the furniture items as possible. The cost was minimal. It was about $1,900. And the last thing we talked about was the work plan item that all of the committees have been addressing. One is that each one of the committees have been charged with coming up with a statement of what they've dealt with or what they've worked on over the past year. So we would be able to have that in our records so we know what has been accomplished over the last year. And as a second part of that, then a strategic plan for the upcoming year as far as what each of those committees would recommend that they deal with in the upcoming year. So when we go to our strategic planning session on the 11th of December, we'll be able to have this information for us in strategizing and including that in our strategic plan. I also appointed a subcommittee to look at the level of service. The subcommittee consists of Tom Wright, I'm sorry, Tom Wright, Richard Margenson, and Chief Fineris, who gladly volunteered to be involved in it. So those three people will be looking at a level of service as far as whether we need to go ahead and hire or we want to go ahead and hire an additional firefighter for implementation in our budgetary process of the next upcoming year. So that's what we're doing on ESAC. And I appreciate all the committee's work because they've worked very hard, I think. So, no questions of that? Okay, then we will, excuse me. Then we'll move to the Utility Advisory Committee. Director Muthart?
Yes, the Utilities Advisory Committee met on Wednesday, October 24th. Our first item was that Rob Miller was invited to come and address our committee regarding the water conservation and emergency water shortage regulation. Rob volunteered his time and gave us a very good insight into many of our questions regarding the drafting of this ordinance. He explained the differences between how a PUC is regulated in this area much differently than a public entity like us and how this can be an important policy issue for us. Rob also talked about metrics involved in determining a trigger to initiate an action should an emergency situation present itself. Example would be measuring salinity. This, of course, would have budget implications as it would require testing on a more frequent and regular basis. The committee recommended that the board president establish a subcommittee to update the current district code, section 2.06. District Engineer Miller and committee member Munns volunteered to serve on the subcommittee. So those are the two people on that we're asking for. AMPI presented the equity closeout and budget adjustments, and the committee went through each of the funds presented. The committee had one recommendation by unanimous vote that one change be made. The committee recommended that the $25,000 let's see if I can read this correctly here. The committee recommended that the board accept staff recommendations that the $25,000 be placed into a capital outlay reserve fund and not go into increasing the contingency reserve, if that made sense. Okay. The committee also recommended that the board maintain current budget allocations for the fiscal year 2012-13. We initiated the procedure also for the UAC 2012-2013 work plan. We discussed a couple of ways to approach the planning process. It was decided the committee members would provide input to staff by November 8th. I think that's the correct date to compile for the next UAC meeting. That's all on our report. Our next meeting is scheduled for November 14th at 5:30 at the CSD office. Did I get that date right, do you think? Yeah, okay.
Any questions? Okay. Seeing none, I guess I will go ahead and appoint a subcommittee then of Rob Miller and Ron Munns.
Yeah, that's citizen. Okay. Rob Miller.
Okay, we'll go ahead and do that. With that, then, we'll move to Financial Advisory Committee.
Okay. Thank you. The FAC, we met this last Monday at 5:30 at the district office. We did review the warrant registers, the financial statements, and the cash and investment schedule, and we recommended that it be forwarded to us for approval. We also reviewed the equity closeout that each committee, the Emergency Services Utility Advisory Committee, commented on, and we recommend that be moved forward to the board for approval tonight. And we also reviewed the draft 2011-12 audit report, which is in process right now. AMPI is working on that now in consultation with the auditors. And our committee also initiated the procedure for the work plan. And the committee, we reviewed quickly, what we accomplished last year. And they are planning on attending the planning session on the 11th. We also reviewed the other committee actions. And on this point, too, one thing that we've developed this year, too, is the more complete minutes, and it's really, really helpful for FAC to go through and visually be able to see what's going on. It really helps a lot, so we're not double guessing ourselves. A few public comments, and then the next meeting for FAC is going to be first part of December, and that concludes my report.
Any questions? Okay, LOCAC, we have nobody here from LOCAC. I attended as our representative. I can say that the regular reports were given, and then they considered writing a letter on the seismic testing, which Vicki did submit a letter. It's part of the record. There was a couple items on the consent agenda. I don't know what happened to those, quite frankly, because I didn't stay through the consent agenda. But that's pretty much the short and the long of that. With that, then, we have the consent calendar. Does anybody want to pull an item? I do have a clarification question. The UAC requested the change the allocation on one of those items. Is that reflected in the item, the budget adjustment says it's on the consent calendar or not? It is? Okay.
I would just say that, if I'm accurate, this is what was published and given to ESAC, AMPI? Okay.
No, we're talking about financial, utility advisory. They recommended a change.
Right, so I would make it on that item as amended to allocate the funds to the $25,000.
That's what I'm asking. How is it in the what we have before us now? Is it the way they recommend it or not?
No, I believe this is the way it was submitted to ESAC. It hasn't been corrected?
No, it's utility advisory.
Utility advisor, this is the same.
Well,
correct.
Item C, but we didn't change ours.
Okay, so it has been changed.
Okay, that's all. Okay, anybody else? Okay. So with that, then, we'll go to public comment on administrative reports, committee reports, and consent agenda items. Yeah, we can't hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay.
You're on.
First thing is that there's a...
Frank, it's the audience at home. I want to make sure.
Hey, Frank Casilio. The first thing is that the counties have an office hours for the wastewater project, I think twice a week. Would you announce that here at that meeting if you're willing to do that? Somebody here on the board. And the other thing is that I believe Leonard and Susan both were at the Board of Supervisors meeting on the 23rd and did official presentation. And I don't, if you want to give some kind of feedback about your experience there or what, you know, what came about on that meeting.
Yeah.
Okay. So I wanted to bring that up. The other thing I want to do is about Phil is that during all the recent hurricane that occurred on the East Coast. One of the main things I've noticed through a number of disasters that have occurred in this country is that there's a problem for people to get fuel, and there's service stations that have fuel and power and they're able to provide it until they run out, and there's service stations that have fuel with no power and cannot provide that fuel to the public. So I was wondering if Phil would bring this back to the county to see a way that to keep that vital service, still be able to provide that to the public. So that's what I'm asking here, because he has ability to go to the county emergency system and bring that forward. So that's all. Thank you.
Julie Tacker, I kind of raised a question in public comment about the consultant for the special planning meeting, and I didn't hear that get answered or even discussed in your general manager's report. I'd like further information about that. My main concern tonight is item 5G you have on your consent calendar. The district is in need of testing to locate the chloride source at the Palisades well and develop a mitigation plan to lower chloride concentrations in produced water. I can tell you where the chloride's coming from. It's the ocean. It's called seawater intrusion. And I had some reservations when we repaired this well back in June that this is bad management. We absolutely cannot continue to pump from that well. And when you turn off the well, there's still a well right here that I believe is being pumped by the county. And that doesn't have a meter on it, and it's in the same saltwater intrusion trough. And there's no, I mean, maybe behind closed doors in your ISJ, you guys have some sort of agreement about how much is actually being pumped in the trough. But by golly, we got to get out of the trough. The years and years of analysis on this basin has sent us to east side wells and a pursuit in the upper aquifer that I disagree with, but east side wells would get us out of the trough. I don't know that people understand that what the trough is an ancient stream that's been filled in with rock and sand, and the ocean is finding its way up that ancient stream. That's what's happened. We've put wells in the stream bed that's underground. So we've got to get out of that trough. And then I want heads on the chopping block. There's culpability here. Cleath and Wallace have been at a different trough for way too long. And I think it's time we need to really talk about how these consultants have driven the district in this direction. And we're losing our equipment to the chloride. This well has been, this pump has been replaced twice in the last 4 years when they have a lifespan of 25 years. So I would have liked to have seen the board take this to a full discussion. I think it's a very serious matter. It's obviously part of the ISJ. That must be why you don't want to talk about it too much. But that ISJ's got to come out of the closet too. The community wants to help you. So let's get on with it.
Thank you. Richard? Anybody after Richard? Nope, seeing none. Richard, you have the floor.
Richard Margetson, Utilities Committee minutes. The item 8, public comments. I don't need a correction. I just wanted to comment that Ann did a real good job of sterilizing my comments.
diplomatic.
Anyway, you brought up something earlier about the $5 million for water conservation. The Utilities Committee looked at the implementation plan. I think that the committee should be tasked with looking at the revision. Not to get it changed at this point, but just so everybody has an idea of what's coming. The implementation plan. Because the condition, like you stated, you know, this disconnect with Mr. Gibson and staff, and John Waddell at the supervisors meeting said, you know, we need to spend up to $5 million to accomplish this goal. That's not what the condition says. The condition says the applicant shall provide $5 million. It doesn't say up to. It says shall provide $5 million of funding towards a water conservation program. That's the sentence, word for word. Now, the reason I'm concerned, and I think the Utilities Committee should be on top of this, is one of the changes that was made, if everybody hasn't read it, is they now have increased their estimate on how many washing machines they think will be replaced in the next 5 years as part of the project from 333 a year for a $150 rebate to now $400 a year. So over the next 5 years, they believe 2,000 washing machines in the prohibition zone will be replaced, more than 40% of the prohibition zone washing machines to meet this standard. And those washing machines are running at least $1,000 to get a $150 rebate. Good luck. The program in San Luis, its entire life of the program in San Luis on washer rebates hasn't hit that total. Another brief comment is they've also shifted $800,000 from administration, which was one of your guys' concerns, into the toilet retrofit program under the belief that 2,600 toilets in Los Osos will be voluntarily replaced at 1.6 gallon per flush down to a 1 or less at the same rebate structure as the original plan. $250 the first year, $160 the second year. They believe 2,600 toilets or 1,300 households will also do that. We need to keep on top of this.
Thank you, Richard. I have one comment, and then I will back up something here. I think that that's something that the Utility Advisory Committee should look at as far as their strategic plans for items for the upcoming year, because I think them keeping on top of the water implementation plan is important. And I do apologize, but I should have asked Leonard to give an update on his attendance at the Board of Supervisors. So after I get acceptance of my items, I'll ask. Well, do you want to do it first or after?
It doesn't matter.
All right. Why don't you, Leonard will give us a short update on his attendance at the Board of Supervisors for the adoption of the Water Implementation Plan.
I will do that. I also want to, can I talk about the consultant thing also? No. Okay. The Board of Supervisors, as I think a lot of people heard, I did show up and talk, address the board on our concerns. It was in response, we responded with what I thought was a well thought out. We spent a lot of time and effort and drafting a letter of response to the implementation plan. The one thing that really struck me the most, that really kind of got me very, I guess I was upset about, was their response to the responses, and particularly the where they the item that was the condition that mentions that they will consult with the purveyors, and their response basically scolded our response, saying that we did, and that really got me, because I felt, and what they basically were talking about is they consulted the ISJ, and they took things from that. So that was what they considered consultation. And so I addressed that and used some strong language and got a strong response from that. So I think that was, you know, it got people's attention, and I hope that we can. I hope we can build on that. I hope that the ultimate thing is we would love to be able to be respected by the county and have a good relationship and good working relation with them to be able to accomplish things. And we stated that in our letter very clearly, that that is our desire, and those types of things. That those don't get attention, but some of the other things do. So, you know, it was, I think it was a good opportunity for us to respond to their response.
Thank you, Fred. The other item you can talk about, in your director's comments at the end.
Okay.
Okay, with that then, can I have a motion, please, to go ahead and accept the administrative reports, committee report, and the consent calendar items with... Yes? No?
Yes. So as moved.
Moved by Vice President Muthart. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Seconded by Director Vogel. Any discussion? Seeing none, can we have a quick roll call, please?
Vice President Muthart?
Vice President
Muthart?
Yes.
Director Vogel?
Yes.
Director Baltimore?
Yes.
Director Wright?
Yes.
President Ohilski?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, I have one item that I need to talk about before we do director's comments. It's been suggested that I'm not going to have a quorum on December 6th, so I would like to reschedule that meeting for December 13th, which is the following Thursday. So if we could go ahead and get concurrence on rescheduling our meeting to December 13th, I would appreciate it.
They moved the Rotary dinner to the 13th.
Well, then we'll have to hold another location because I don't have a quorum on the 6th. I appreciate it. We're going to do it here, but that won't work. But anyways, can we go ahead and reschedule a meeting for the 13th? Does anybody have objection to that?
No.
I didn't know. I can do both. I can serve both ways.
Okay. All right, we'll go ahead and reschedule our meeting for the 13th, or pardon me, our December meeting for the 13th at a location to be determined. I think the advantage also of doing it on the 13th, that will be after the strategic planning session, so we'll have the opportunity to consider that and discuss that at our last meeting of the year. So with that, then, we'll go ahead and move to director comments. We'll start with Director Vogel.
Yes, I also want to thank Leonard for speaking up for the district at the Board of Supervisors meeting. I was listening to that on the radio, and I was really taken aback by the way he was treated by Supervisor Gibson. I thought his treatment was uncalled for. And it shows that the county is continuing to treat us poorly. And I think if we want to change that, we do what Leonard just said before, is that we need to earn their respect. And I think we have been doing that. And they need to pay attention to the fact that we are not a bunch of wild crazies. And getting their respect does not mean we need to get them to love us. So I think that we have to maintain our professionalism and maintain a distance from the county, because they're not always our friend. In fact, they're rarely our friend. So I think this board has been consistent in working with the community the past couple of years. I think it's going to continue that way. And the county needs to pay attention to that and give us the respect we deserve.
Thank you. Director Baltimore, I'm going to make you next, so, because I always go to Wright second. So it's his birthday. We're saving him till last.
Okay. Good night.
All right. We'd like to acknowledge and thank the El Moro Nazarene Church for hosting the Fall Festival, and all the volunteers and community agencies that volunteer and donated to it. It's an event that over the last, I don't know, 8 years, 2,000 to 3,000 people attend, and it's just an alternative to Halloween. And you know, for young kids, everything's free: candy, games, bounce houses. And so I just wanted to acknowledge that and thank them. And again, to echo Director Vogel's comments, we ask consistently, and we are here, and we want to work with the county. It's you know, unbelievable that our supervisor would claim that consulting a document is working with us. You know, I can only imagine how he treats other districts in his county, to say he's working with them when he just opens a piece of paper. So, again, we are here. We want to work with you, county. Please work with us. Okay, and with that, have a good night.
All right, Director Moodhart. We're saving you for last, right? I'm telling you. Director Moodhart.
Okay, I want to thank everybody for their support and their for my the response to my comments at the board. But I did want to address, it was brought up a couple times about us hiring a consultant for our strategic planning meeting. This, of course, is something that's very commonly done in industry. I've participated in several of these types of events throughout my career. And one of the things that makes them successful is having it. It's not just the facilitator, but it's the willingness of the participants and what the, and how motivated they are to accomplish their goals. And I think for our board and the professionalism that we have and the experience we have, that this type of activity would benefit greatly from a facilitator. They will definitely make things more efficient and keep us on task. We have a short time to accomplish a tremendous amount, and a professional facilitator will help us do that. I think it'll benefit us in the long run, because this, to me, is probably the single most important thing that we're going to be doing is the strategic plan. It's unfortunate that it's going to be in the evening. I just hope everybody can take a nap, because we need to work. We need to bring our brains, and we need to really work through this. This is going to be our roadmap for the next year, and then that'll lead to the following year. And I think that just listening to the public comment meeting after meeting, this is the type of thing that we need. We need this. We need to have a good plan and stick with it, and so we don't get sidetracked and run this district efficiently. I don't have an answer for that, but
it's a local consultant, yeah. And I believe it's $500. Yeah. Is that correct? Yeah. Yeah. It's a local person, and it's $500. I'd just like to say a few things. I'm going to let Mike have the last word for one of the few times in his life. That's why I'm saving it over. It's his birthday present. I really appreciate when we had the discussion on the seismic testing that we did have people that had not come here before to comment, and I think getting more people involved in the community, even if it's a specialized issue, is very, very important. So I really want to express my appreciation to those people for coming. I'd like to thank Leonard for going to the Board of Supervisors and representing us. There was a busy day that day because Mike and I were on a conference call at the same time as the Board of Supervisors meeting. So I want to thank you for your representation. And I think it's crystal clear to us where we're trying to go with this. There's a condition that they have to meet, and mm-hmm. we're going to make sure they meet it. Just one comment about the strategic plan. You know, this is, I think, just another step in us trying to get a long-term plan put together. So we've been working on getting our committees together and getting our committees to go ahead and do strategic planning, and now we feel like it's appropriate time to go ahead and move forward with the strategic plan for the entire district. So as we move into the future, we can know exactly what our goals and objectives are. And hopefully we'll have participation from the community, so people can come out and say, these are the higher priority items for us, and this is what you should be devoting your time to. So that's really our idea here, is we're trying not just to identify strategies or goals, but we're trying to prioritize them. And it's going to be a really, like Leonard says, it's going to be a really intensive session, but we feel like it's important. We're having all our committees do the preparatory work, and then when we get into that session, we're going to be able to say, this is what's important to us, you know, and this is how we want to go ahead and prioritize it. So I think it's a really big step forward, and it's something we've been working on getting to do. I'm going to go ahead and repeat the Maxine Lewis Homeless Shelter and Transitional Food and Shelter, December 8th, 2012, open house here. Open house from here, 10 to 7 p.m. It's here, and it's really a successful event every year after the Christmas parade. One thing I just wanted to stress, and I know that this is talking to the wrong audience, but, you know, this is a countywide event. It's not just a local event. So we have every year people come from Templeton. I know people come from all over the county. So it's a really, really good event, and I would encourage everybody to participate. So with that, as your birthday present, Mike, one of them, I know you're expecting a cream pie in the face or something,
yeah,
but I got nothing.
I'm getting worried here.
No, we'll leave you with the last word for tonight.
Good night. I just want to tell everybody what a great event the fire station had for their open house. They do a fabulous job. There was lots of people out there. The Jaws of Life, I think that person didn't realize his car was being involved on this. But that was pretty impressive. And again, like Marshall said also, is the needs and wishes, and I'm looking forward to ringing the bell again this year. And then also to remind everybody that Dig Los Osos does have office hours out here, and they are on at the old RTA building on 10th Street, Tuesdays 1 to 4, and Thursdays 9 to 12, subject to change, because it's the county. And with that, good night.
So when are you